This episode was recorded on Dog Island inside of a amazing beach house. You're gonna hear some sounds of wind and some sound of mic movement. It was an impromptu recording of the Most High Show and probably one of the most realist podcasts yet. Take a listen and be patient with the sound, and hopefully you get as much out of it as I did sitting there recording it with the guys.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Well, glad to have you here today. And out on Dog Island has turned out to be quite a recovery retreat with guys from your halfway house up in Asheville. And what do you think of it so far?
Thanks, Dean. Yeah, and again, really appreciate you taking us down here. I didn't really know what to expect, taking some days off work and coming down to the beach and then hearing it was going to be a rigorous workshop. You know, a lot of the guys at first were like, what? You know, I'm not doing any of that. And then as soon as we got started and heard the stories of the people like yourself, Dan, a few of the other guys running this program, we were by step two, totally immersed and dedicated to getting it done. A lot of the guys, I feel, have been motivated to get, you know, to start looking at their careers and figuring out ways to achieve their goals. Because, you know, just because you're a drug addict doesn't mean you don't have goals. And then when we hear people like yourself and Dan, who have been so successful despite a terrible addiction, it's really motivating. So I've had a great time. There's definitely been some moments that I'll never forget down here. Been some fun mixed in for sure. And I feel rejuvenated and ready to get back to work. Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Well, the main thing we're trying to convey to you guys is that it's okay to have your brokenness and to have issues, and that this brokenness will actually end up being your asset later on because it causes you to look inward. And if you stay on the path, you will go deeper and deeper, and you're going to learn more about yourself over time and start to, because you'll be forced to adopt certain principles of the way you live in your life. And those principles will carry you through thick and thin and give you an abundant rewards over and over. There's basic laws in life, we believe, like the laws of attraction. And what you think about most comes to you. Or you can draw it into your life, negative and positive. And it's those basic things that we want to kind of outline for you with doing the 12 steps, along with doing the 12 steps quickly. And we also want to take a lot of the fear out of that process for you guys, because just like myself, people have a tendency to get stuck on step four and not move forward with it. So we wanted to show you that, you know, it's not a boogeyman. It's just a process. It's a good way to live your life by, and to do that in an environment where your mind is open here, you know, in the such a beautiful place, abundant wildlife and fishing and swimming and all sorts of stuff going on that is tends to open up your heart and your mind to hear more that is being said. So it's not unusual to come in with fears and a certain closed-mindedness, and for us to get a little pry bar in there and pop it open, and because down deep you guys really do want to move forward in life and be all that you can be.
Absolutely. And you mentioned removing the fear. It definitely did that. I remember the first time I heard about the step the 12 steps, I was like, ah, man, I don't want to make amends. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of the part of the 12 steps you see in TV shows and stuff, people apologizing for stealing money from whoever it is. Or, and hearing you guys go through the steps and describing what it's actually like, you know, makes it sound so much easier. You know, there's, and doable. There's people that have paved the way for us to work these 12 steps, and there's, you know, certain paradigms, instructions that make something so formidable as making amends to every person you've ever wronged possible, and actually something to look forward to and rewarding. It definitely, and it, like you said, it didn't only remove the fear. I think it also made me eager to work the steps and get through them. Just hearing about the intrinsic rewards that you, Dan, everyone else involved, Christian, got from working these steps makes me look forward to doing a fifth step with my sponsor, to making an amends to my dad, or to ultimately work in the 12th step like you are doing this weekend. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. And I hope what we've said here and the actions that we've taken, you know, do resonate with all you guys. I think even a few of them that maybe are not ready to totally stop. They want to do things their way. You know, this thing's getting in my way. I'm hip, slick, and cool, and I need to be out there again. And I've noticed even the tougher cases, I've noticed that their eyes have opened a little bit more. They're interacting a little bit more. And, you know, the voice of reason has a tendency to finally reach that mind, and you're going, you know, you can't really deny it anymore. That's the life I want, and I know kind of I'm doing wrong. But the to cut through the delusional nature of a addict.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. I think back to my addiction and a lot of the other people that I used drugs with and drank with. You know, they weren't people that didn't have goals or just, quote unquote, didn't give a shit about life, which a lot of people believe about addicts, and which I think I even believed about addicts at a time before I acknowledged I was one. We had goals. We would like to have families, almost without, and successful careers almost without exception. When I think back to the people that I used and drank with. And a fulfilling, successful life. And when I reached a point in my addiction where I realized that there's absolutely no way I'm ever going to achieve those goals if I am using or drinking, and there's no way that I can not use or drink unless I figure out some totally new approach to life. And that was the point when I was able to really adopt this program and become willing to sacrifice whatever's necessary to get it done. And, you know, there's been some bumps and roads. I've been sober 8 months now. But I'm feeling really confident with my sobriety, because I'm really enjoying the life that I have now, and working the program, being with my friends in the program is more of a fulfilling, enjoyable life than I've ever had. So I feel strong right now about my sobriety at 8 months, and it's hard to imagine being 28 years sober, but I know that the only way I'm going to have a life analogous to yours, where I have reached the pinnacle of my career, tremendous success, have a rewarding life, enjoyable life, is to work this program and to be sober for 28 years. I mean,
I think you're, I appreciate you saying all that stuff. And, you know, I think you're doing well and you're brave for jumping in at 8 months. I don't know if I would have done that myself. I was such a quiet guy at that point because I really had almost zero interaction with anybody while I was sober. So I think you're ahead of where I was. So, and, you know, the funny thing is I ultimately what gave me the foundation to move forward with all these years was doing the step work and turning it over. The only thing that really mattered or that ultimately mattered was me trusting something outside of my own mind. And I was convinced that, you know, I'd be quiet, but in the background, I'm checking everything. I'm going to find the best side route around the way. I'm going to figure it out because I'm going to somehow figure out how I can still keep on using drugs and drinking. And I was still going to be, lead a prosperous life and have what I wanted. And of course, my goals have changed since then. I wanted a Jaguar, which I finally got, and that was a big deal to me. And it turned out it was a little ridiculous. But you have to go through all these stages to become who you ultimately want to become. And I may be in another stage right now. I don't know. You know, in relation to a few of the other things that you said, there was a guy before, Bill Wilson, that was a hard charger, very wealthy family, shipbuilding family from Providence, Rhode Island, and last name was Hazard. His name was Roland Hazard. And he helped get Ebby Thatcher sober, and Ebby was Bill's sponsor, so to speak, before AA, before the official start of AA. And Ebby Thatcher went and spent a year or quite a considerable time with Carl Jung, arguably one of the smartest individuals in the study of psychology in the world or who had ever lived at that point. Anyway, he spent a good bit of time with him. And he was convinced that if he went to him through therapy and additional knowledge about himself through Carl Jung in Austria, or Jung, in Austria, that he would be cured somehow. So he stayed there for quite a while, and he left. And of course, there was no airplanes back then. He was on a train and ended up not a lot of airplanes. And he was on a train, ended up in Paris. And I think when he reached Paris, he got on another train, and they said, "Hey, would you like a glass of wine with dinner?" And he said, "Yeah, sure, I'll have one." Drank the wine, and next thing you know, he's drinking. Turned around, went back to Carl Jung, said, "I can't believe it. What's going on? I just spent all this time with you, and I thought I was over it. And just the simplest suggestion that I might go ahead and have another glass of wine, and I drank." And Carl Jung said, "There is nothing in this dimension or that is empowered by a human that is going to help you. I have seen people overcome the alcoholism and drug addiction, but it all came from a power outside of themselves." So, and what that said eventually to Bill Wilson is really for us, the only solution is a spiritual one. So I can spin around and around and around, and ultimately I'm going to have to come back to a God. I could pick any God, but I've got to pick one. It just can't be me. And in relation to your point you said before, fast forward, Bill Wilson wrote a letter to Carl Jung. And he asked, "Hey, I don't know if you ever realized what happened to this Roland Hazard fellow that you dealt with. I know it's many years ago." And Carl Jung was old then when he received the letter. And he quickly turned around and sent it back to Bill, his response. And Bill said, "Hey, our fledgling society back then has taken hold, and we're around the globe, and it's really turned out to be something, and we think we're helping mankind, and I want to thank you for your input. It was invaluable." And he wrote Bill a letter back, and you can look it up online and use it as a reference. And part of what's in that letter is commentary from Carl Jung. Some of it points to the fact that, "I'm sorry I couldn't be more forward talking about a spiritual solution. But at that date and that time, it's not something that I could have done easily. I would have been looked down by behind the professionals in my field. It would have been shunned. I would have been shunned. Secondly, as my understanding of alcoholics is that they seem to have a deeper yearning than other individuals. This longing, this primitive longing for connectedness to a spiritual solution or God makes them particularly uncomfortable. So they are the most susceptible to going and using something to numb out. So in a way, it's as though they're walking the earth with their arms out looking for a solution already, and they can't do it, more so than your average person. And because of that, we look for other solutions just to not feel, because we're trying to get to that deeper understanding. So it's an easy thing to pull up and look at anytime that's there, and it's good. Someday you're going to have some sponsees, some guys that you might help. Who's the smartest guy in the world saying that maybe it's biological? We're the psychological wanderer, so to speak. We're looking to get our spiritual thirst quenched. And when we come from a dysfunctional family or we're just lost, we find drugs, and that quenches it in a fake way, in a false way, but it quenches it. So, but anyway, it's it just made me think of that. And
thanks for that, Dan. I really agree. I partially knew some of that history. I've watched the Bill Wilson movie, and it always struck me as very profound when Bill Wilson and his old drinking buddy, Evie, like you spoke about, were going to meet up after a few years, and they went to a bar, and Bill was already drinking. Abby showed up, and Bill said, I believe this is correct. It's how the movie portrays it. Bill said, can I get you a drink? And Abby said, no. And then he explained to him, I don't drink anymore. And as Bill wrote in Bill's story in AA book that day, he looked at Abby and realized that he was an entirely different person. He recognized him physically by his appearance, but the way he acted and his essence that he gave off seemed like he was an entirely different person inside the same body. And that struck me as powerful, because I feel like that's what I needed. And because I grew up in a family that was very religious. None of them are alcoholics or addicts in my direct family, and they all were very passionate about Christianity and their love for God, and I just didn't seem to get it. I was the guy that was sleeping in the back of church, hungover from the night before, I didn't get it. And when I went to treatment for the first time, and everyone said the only solution is God, it's like, well, I've had God all my life, and that didn't work. And after I relapsed a few times, I started to become convinced that I was one of those that the book mentions are constitutionally incapable of being honest. And really, looking at it now, that was just a cop-out, because I was lost and confused and did not see any other path for my life than a life where I was under the influence of drugs. And I had come to terms with the idea of dying an addict's death in my 20s. I had come to terms with that, and it is heavy. And when I look at how I am here now, sober 8 months, there must have been a higher power involvement. There's just something greater than me and certainly my desire to use that brought me to Asheville ultimately, introduced me to you and your sponsee, who gave me a job, and that job gave me a purpose. And before I know it, I'm 8 months sober, and there are people new to the meetings in Asheville that are looking up to me and talking about being a sponsor. And it's just blows me away.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And just from knowing a little bit about you through Joe and spending time with you and so forth, I'm convinced that this particular retreat or weekend is going to be a pivot point, so to speak, or for you. And your trajectory and sobriety should change. A different level of self-love and understanding of the path that you're on will give you more confidence with it, more purpose as you're moving through it. And I had someone, an older gentleman, I'm not quite as old as he was, have the same type of conversations with me when I first came in. And he said, Dean, I believe in you. I think you're going to get it. And now sitting with you, I think once you get focused, which you are, I think you're going to be fine. I think that you're going to work out, and so I believe in you. I think you're going to do it. And the path is clear in front of you. You have the tools set in front of you, and you have other people that are examples of what your life is going to look like years down the road. So, as they say, just keep your feet pointed toward the sun and take the next right step. And coupled with that, if the stuff hits the fan at any point, you now have a bigger network to call on and talk to people and reach out and take the fire out of different situations or the explosiveness out of it. So it's not the end of the world. You know, there are no big deals. There really aren't. I would make everything a big deal back then, but and once you learn that, life becomes smoother, and you can let your emotions go by like clouds. You know, just sit, let it go, and
I got a question. I got a question for you, Dean. So I am at a point now in my sobriety where the consequences that I faced are starting to fade away, and it's not there for a while. The first 3 or 4 months, I'd wake up every day and have to look in the mirror and think about the consequences I'm dealing with. Probation in multiple states, pretty much all friendships lost trust in family. And now I am off both probations. Let me go back a second. Other consequences is I was once in medical school. That's no longer an avenue I can return back to easily. It would take a lot of work. So that is a consequence that was very upsetting for a while. I once had a job in finance, and I failed at both of those due to my addiction. And so I guess to sum up the consequences I was facing, probation and multiple states, destroyed relationships across the board, two careers that I thought were my dream careers that were not enough, and I thought I was hopeless at that point, but I was just going day one day at a time. As the days accumulated, I'm here 8 months, I'm off probation, I have some great friends that came with me on this trip. My relationship with my family, each family member, in fact, is better than ever. And I wonder, now that I don't have the consequences scaring me away from use, I get a little nervous about returning to addiction. You know, once things are good again, what's going to keep me away from that drink or that first drink, which and the evidence is in for me. If I take that first drink, I will, within days, be blowing my bank account on Schedule I narcotics and will, within weeks, end up in jail or the hospital or dead. That might be the next step. And a lot of people, a lot of my friends have died. That's a real threat. But
you have fears coming up that you're, some of the things that kept you in line are now kind of fading away. It's more up to you.
Exactly.
The consequences aren't as severe as they were in the with the law and those sorts of things.
So what did you do kind of when...
Well, I was essentially in the same place that you were, and I went back and I caught myself close enough because I know that I have so much evidence that I stopped trying to stop drinking for so long because I refused to do the step work. And by not doing four and acknowledging a God of my own understanding, and I was so anti-church, anything Christian, any cross that comes up, I was like, get out of here. Get away, you fraudulent, fake human beings. And I stayed away from every church. And even I had that attitude already all the way through for years, I'm sober.
Yeah.
So it's a mountain. There's a God at the top of it. There's a lot of different trails up that mountain. One might be Christianity. And there's a bunch of other ones, you know. I think you can believe in Scientology. I think that's what it is. That's, to me, that's the biggest thing that Bill Wilson brought to that. There's, it can be any God. And it will work, and it will give you grace. Pick one, because they're all the same one. There's no limiting path or anything else. So, instead of giving you the answer, what do you think? We just went through the workshop. What do you think? What do you think you need to do?
Based on what I've learned here and prior treatments, conversations with people in recovery, I think that there's really three. I like to picture kind of, someone pointed this out to me, and I like it. I like to picture kind of a triangle of recovery, where one point is the program. One point of the triangle is the steps, the 12 steps, and working with a sponsor, and then another point would be the fellowship, going to meetings, etc., and the third being personal spirituality, meditation and prayer. I guess that's also a part of the steps, but I think that I'm going to have to just go all in. You know, I've got to work the steps with the sponsor I currently have. There's in the past, actually, Nick, the head of my halfway house, pointed out to me that a few weeks ago that he thought I was kind of taking a shortcut with sponsorship. I chose a sponsor that I knew would be easy and would let me through the steps quickly. And I had to get honest with myself and choose a different sponsor that's doesn't mess around.
I chose an 88-year-old sponsor when I first came in.
I think I got to focus on all three aspects of those of my life, and you know, do it like my life depends on it, because it really does. And that maybe if that sounds cliche, I don't know, but it.
I put that question out there back to you to see if you could answer it on your own. And I know you already have in your own mind, which you've got to get a competent sponsor and work on the steps and worry less about making money, your job, other, because that's all anxiety driven stuff. And do the act of self-love. You actually doing thorough job on the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. And then start sponsoring, guys. That is what's going to save you. And everything else, if you do that, everything else will work out. It's that simple. And you don't have to worry as much, because you'll be feeling good about yourself. You'll be in alignment. you'll be working. You'll be, you know, you're a worker naturally. You know, you got certain, you like me, you got anxiety about money, so you're always going to be working, trying to make some. You will never miss a meal because you're going to put that as a priority. The issue is putting that down enough where you're picking up the pencil and doing the stuff and doing self-analysis. So I'll tell you something right now, and I wasn't going to say this, but we were beginning to start the four step, and Dan was speaking. You were sitting right in front of him, and I was sitting over there. And he started into the four step, and I looked at you, and I said to myself, I wonder if he has the insights or the ability or any level of self-analysis where he can see himself. In which case, maybe a little light will go on and he'll be able to forgive himself, because I think he's carrying some old stuff that, and with his mistakes with family and everything else, he has got to learn to forgive himself. But I don't know if he has that level of self-awareness. That was my only thought. Then I backed off and I'm just sitting there doing something else. And then Dan finished it up. And then he says, "Are there any questions?" And you were sitting like right exactly in front of him. I don't know if you remember. And you put your hand up. Do you remember the question you asked him?
I don't.
Okay. Your question was, you know, Dan, you're talking about all these people to forgive. Would I put myself on there too? Isn't that crazy?
That's wow.
So, and I was like, you know, I told Reed, I told a couple people that, and I wasn't going to mention it to you today, so it crossed my mind that you need to forgive yourself.
Sure.
Just from, and I don't mean that in a critical way, I mean from sponsoring a bunch of guys, from what I'm hearing from you, which is some of my old stuff, is that I'm still carrying around that I'm worried about so many things that are not going to work out, that I've got to just let myself off the hook, that I don't have to be pressure from everybody else in the past. I got to allow myself to just be and forgive myself for addiction and that kind of stuff, so I can at least get a level playing field, a ground zero to start again. And so it would just cross my mind, and then bingo, a little while later, you answered my question. In a solitary, you were the first one to answer in a pretty straightforward way, too. So very interesting that happened.
I really appreciate you pointing that out, because you're totally right. There is a strong sense of guilt I feel, because I grew up in a really good family. I had no childhood trauma. My parents are incredible people, great, strong morals, good brother, older brother and sister. And somehow or another, I ended up being a medical school dropout that was smoking crack and doing heroin, IV. That's something that 10 years ago I would have said is the, you know, the bottom level of society, you know. And it's hard now. And you're right. I got to come to terms with the fact that that's me. That's who I was. And I had a really bad addiction. When I started drinking, once that craving starts, I totally lose control.
I was that bad, and you can have a full prosperous life. I was the derelict in my family. Whenever something happens now, I'm usually consulted on what they should do. I'm like the older wise guy. So in order to move in that direction, you need to forgive yourself.
Yeah.
Is what I'm getting at.
How do you go about forgiving yourself?
What the process we've been talking about, and we've been kind of skimming over some of it, but what we're trying to get to is you have a toolkit. So for each thing going on with you, you're going to be able to pick up a tool. And these tools, any human, they work for everybody. Addicts are the only ones pushed into the corner to be forced to use them. So
you're going to be on your fourth step on what you did to yourself. You watched the movie last night that your ego is sort of separate from you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that ego trashed you. And mine tore me up, and it pushed me.
You would say it's my ego that's telling me.
Get another rock. Pushed you to the point until you were addicted.
Another rock, get more heroin, and don't forgive yourself. You are guilty. You are the
same. Dean is a piece of crap, piece of shit. This is all you're going to be. Go out and get another fucking rock. There's no use in you even trying. Don't even try. Just go get another rock. Kill that guy. Do whatever.
You're the scum of the earth.
You got it. And I always called it my Santa Claus bag. You know, like I would carry these old experiences and the shame and the guilt and the remorse over my shoulder for a long time. And I've earned this shit. You're not going to take it away from me. I was tough, man. You should have seen what I've been through. You haven't lived in your car. You haven't lived under a bridge. You haven't done all this stuff. And then I would empty that stuff out, spread it all on the floor, and then show you and tell you the story of myself. You know, the problem, that's okay early on. The problem is I got to get over myself. I'm not that important, either the negative side or positive side. So once I do that, then I can empty that stuff out and let it go. And the problem is if I carry that bag of stuff with me, I'm still identifying myself with the past, with the negativity and all that kind of stuff. You're 8 months sober and clean, so it doesn't need to happen tomorrow. Just stay on track with the steps and stay in service to others. Start sponsoring some guys. Eventually you should get up to 7 sponsees, one for every day. For us, we need to be kept out of self. And by you worrying about a guy or trying to help him is going to keep you out of self. And there's plenty that you're a worker, you're going to work and make money.
Sure. Speak on that subject. You mentioned, you know, putting work aside and focusing on the steps. You know what job I have. And you get reports about my work. And how do I balance my...
You write a set of goals out. You take that set of goals, you put it on your mirror at home, you put it in your car, and you put it on your computer. So wherever you go, you're looking through it. And with that, you get a half an hour of every day for spiritual work. You're 8 months in, you should still be going to a meeting a day, or one every 2 days at least. You should be going to 5 a week.
Okay.
You know, 5 meetings a week. You spend a half an hour a day reading spiritual stuff, and a half an hour a day working on yourself. Maybe hobbies, or watching TV, whatever, you know, reading a fun book. But that half hour that you're putting toward the program is just stay disciplined about it. You got 30 minutes of program time. I got to write in the morning, at night, or anything else. It could be step work, wherever you are in the process, what we're talking about.
Writing is what helps you the most.
Writing, because number one, it allows you to get it out of your system. It's now on the paper. Number two, it makes this circle, I call it. When your eyes see the written word that are coming out of your hand, that are coming out of your brain, that process of you reliving it physically is therapeutic, and it helps to get it out.
Okay.
So, and then once it's out, you're going to be like, okay, here's all my shame. It's right here. I'm going to take this ball of shit on this paper and set it over here for now. But I'm a little lighter. I'm okay. I can see a little more clearly. And when you're clearer, you make better decisions. And you stay in discipline mode.
Okay, I like that. Thank you, Dane. So I got another question that's might seem a little strange, but I often wonder, someone in your shoes that's had, well, a decade sober in your case, but even a decade sober, do you ever think maybe your life would have been more enjoyable if maybe you had given yourself a year to get away from drugs and then drink?
Oh, shit, I tried that. I tried everything.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have stopped. The only way I stopped is it's like you have a towel, and I put it in that ocean, and I bring it out, and I am wringing that thing for every drop. There was nothing left. That's my life. There was zero left. I stretched it out. I tried every shortcut. I tried every drug. I tried changing every variable, and in that process, I pushed every single human being away from me, and I was alone, and I was unemployable, and I hated myself. So instead,
And I still was trying to convince myself, hey, I'm better off drinking and doing all this stuff than having to dig into all that emotion.
Yeah.
So, no, that's your addiction
that's
telling you that.
Exactly. Okay.
That's your addiction telling you that.
And I got it, you know, we live in a society that tells people, particularly my age, you know, the only way to have fun is to drink Bud Lights and go to clubs. And furthermore, that special occasions are to be celebrated with champagne and your honeymoon should be filled with champagne.
Oh, yeah. It's all marketing, commercials.
Exactly.
Money. Making money
just,
on you.
Like, am I going to not drink champagne on my honeymoon? You know, like that type of thing. I wonder sometimes, but I guess I got to remind myself that
you will look back. You will look back at yourself with that question, and you will go, "Man, I was ridiculous. I wasn't even worried about." You're going to grow above all that stuff,
yeah.
And it won't even become a question to you anymore.
Okay,
you know.
I guess I got to remind myself that I wasn't drinking champagne. I was smoking crack. And
you're
going to
be smoking
heroin.
Crack, yeah. And you're sticking chemicals in your body to numb out. Why? I'm looking out at the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, this place is beautiful. Yeah. Why? Why do I want to avoid this and not feel and not see and all that? So I'm going to take alcohol, which is poison, or crack, whatever drugs they are, to lower my consciousness so I'm not involved in this? Why?
Yeah.
Why do people drink why have a beer at all?
Yeah. I took a lot of Xanax, and that was... I forget the great thing, great things that happened.
Anyway, yeah. All that's going to get clear. In 8 months, you're...
I guess part of it is just accepting that most of the population is able to drink one... No, well, probably the majority, at least, is able to drink a glass or two of champagne and not... And it'd be all right.
A lot of them could do it. I can't.
Yeah, okay.
If you give me... You know, anyway, whatever it is, I'm going to do it to excess.
Yeah.
So, well, it could be almost shark fishing, you know. Could be anything, so. But, well, it sure has been good sitting down with you today.
Yeah,
glad
Dean.
To get to know you a little bit. And I'm very hopeful for you and your future.
Thank
and I
you,
hope
Dean.
You use me as a resource anytime you're feeling down in a hole and all that. And I think you're going to be fine.
Thanks, Dean. I appreciate that. And, again... this weekend, I know you put a lot of effort into it. Christian, Dan, all of you guys put a lot of effort into it, and it's been very rewarding to all of us, and it's life-changing is not an exaggeration, really. And I think, you know, I used to be all about getting high, and coming on a trip like this gives you it gives you a spiritual high, and I just want you to know that you already do know that how rewarding these trips are. But
you're welcome. Welcome, and my hope is that you're. You know, you fall back in love with yourself, forgive yourself for the past, and take this toolkit that we've given you and keep on moving forward. And then take that and share it. Play it forward. That's my hope.
Thank you, Dane. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.